Today, we talk with Sheena Simmons, the dynamic CEO of Stuart Simmons. Discover how Sheena transformed her love for college sports into a thriving business, creating stylish game day apparel for women. From navigating the complexities of collegiate licensing to expanding into new markets, Sheena shares her journey and the secrets behind her brand success. Tune in to hear about the rise of women's sports, the challenges of inventory management, and the importance of work-life balance in building a successful brand. All that and more on today's episode of The Marketing Madmen.
They say marketing is a madman's game. So now we turn it over to The Marketing Madman with Nick Constantino and Trip Joel.
Happy Saturday. Welcome to The Marketing Madmen. Nick Constantino here, and today we have a fun conversation about college sports, one of my favorite things. Most of you know I'm a Yankee, so this has all been pretty new to me to find out how this world works, and I'm unraveling little nooks and crannies of it as we go. So for the conversation, we have Sheena Simmons, the CEO of Stuart Simmons, which is making cool gear for chicks.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a better way to say it?
No, that is the best way to say it. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's get the hard part out of the way first. You're a Florida State fan, which must suck terribly this year. So what the hell happened? What fell apart? And how long does Norvell have?
I'm not going to answer any of those questions for you, but I will agree that it is it's a tough year for us. And so I've been a Florida State fan for many, many years. I'm not going anywhere. But it's tough in the Simmons household. And we're all Florida State fans in my house. So
That makes it really hard. All right. So obviously, there's the passion there. So let's talk a little bit about your upbringing, what you go into college, what made you a college football fan? Because, if you're in Atlanta and most of the Southeast, you understand this. But there's a lot of people that don't have a clue how this all works. So talk a little bit about the upbringing. Talk about how you got so passionate about college sports.
Wasn't a college football fan until I went to college.
Okay.
And I went to Florida State for undergrad. And loved everything about being there. And for me, it was sports, but it was also just the collegiate community.
Yeah.
It was academia that I loved. And I very, very quickly fell in love with college football. And that for me is the food and the fashion and everything surrounding it. And so that became a big part of who I was while I was there and who I am now. And, I love being there. I love being on campus, but I love every aspect of it. I love that I can go for a jog on Saturday and see a Florida Gator fan and give them a go Noles and a nice little wink, you know? Like, that to me is one of the things that makes living in the South so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's funny. There was just an article that came out. It was pretty much saying, like, go suck at Harvard because everyone's going to the South because of the pageantry
of
college football.
Of course.
And they were mentioning, like, Alabama, and they were mentioning schools that, like, 20 years ago would be like a joke. Oh, you're going to Alabama. Okay. I mean, even Georgia takes that now. You're talking these schools are impossible to get into.
Yeah.
And it's not the education. I'm sure the education has gotten better if people moved here, but it has been the camaraderie and the passion and the about college sports.
It's the spirit, it's the community, and now, like, we still make it to Tallahassee. I love to go to new campuses. I love to travel and see new schools and what they're like, and they're all different but the same in so many new ways, and so it's all special and magical to me.
They are all different, and I think that as a, most people, like, what I love about, like, college basketball, for example, a team gets in, even if they get to the dance, the amount of people that Google that school the next day because they don't know where the hell it
Absolutely.
Is, and they find out about that school, and they find out that this is a 3,000-person liberal arts college that, Stephen F. Austin, all these schools that no one has ever heard of. Again, it how important. Now, we're going to skip the NIL conversation because I have a feeling
you.
It might just all explode and this might all go to crap real fast because of what's going on. So let's skip that.
All right.
So,
but you didn't skip Florida State for me. So that's okay.
I didn't
skip
that. Right. Because one won't lead to a very long conversation because it just sucks. The other one will go down a rabbit hole that we do not have time or the effort to go down. So to give you my background very quickly, I went to the University of Maryland. Mm-hmm. I was there for a national championship in basketball. Mm-hmm. And I was there when the team was selling 40,000 people. Ralph Ridge and the coach. We went to the Orange Bowl 2 years in a row. My experience was very different. Just the Northeast as a whole, how you treat sports is different.
Yeah.
The way the females, the girls that went to college would go to the game is they pretty much rolled out of bed at what they were wearing, got hammered drunk in a parking lot, and then mm-hmm. walked into the game.
Uh-huh.
There was no pageantry. There was no
so
getting
back So we still do the same here with the getting hammered drunk, but we look really good,
it's a good
when we do it. You know?
Area.
Exactly.
Okay, so that frames it perfectly. So talk about going to a game. Yeah. Talk about the pop and circumstance that goes to getting dressed, showing your team colors, when to do it. Talk about this because, you know, the rules, I don't want to say the rules are different because it sounds like a sexist wrong thing to say, but the rules are freaking different.
Yeah.
The way you go about showing your fandom is going to be different than a Florida State guy who's just like, oh, I went to Florida State.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about
it. And that's really what we do. When we talk about like what makes Stuart Simmons different, we're not making t-shirts that you're wearing just around the house on a Tuesday. We are making the clothes that you're wearing to show off your school colors. Like, you are going there so that people know that you're the talk of the tailgate. And that for us, yeah, of course, that is all about tailgating and that's getting ready for the big game. But that's also, you know, so many of us, it's not just going, it's having parties at home, it's bringing people together. And, you know, we believe in like, hey, we're going to spend the time and we're going to look really good when we go out and support our team.
Yeah. So talk about some of the gear. So, you know what? Let's take a step back.
Yeah.
How about talk about how you went to go, why you wanted to start the company. Yeah. Talk about the process and get yourself sped up today, because when we come back from the break, I really want to dive into, because the story you're going to tell is the abridged easy version. And I'm sure there was a lot of hardship in opening your own business and COVID and a lot of things. So talk about why you wanted to start it, what the process was like, and then where you are today.
So I'll give you the abridged version. My background's in finance, which has nothing to do with fashion.
I'm
retail.
A finance major as well.
Cool,
so we share
cool.
that. Okay,
good. So I spent my life in corporate finance.
Okay.
And this, like going back to Florida State while I was there, loved college football, had trouble even 15, 20 years ago finding what I wanted to wear every Saturday.
Yeah.
And I found myself after I graduated and I was working in finance and I still wanted to go to the games and I still wanted to buy stuff every year. And there just weren't good options for women. And women are more than 50% of the kids that are at school,
right?
Yeah,
it's wear a small men's shirt. It was pretty much your
exactly.
option.
Exactly. Like, with a Florida State head on it. There was nothing special about it. And so I thought for sure, like, there had to be something that we could do that was different. Anyways, fast forward. I'm working corporate America. I had my second child, so I was on maternity leave, and I just had this time to kind of reflect, and I was like, hey, I had a really good corporate job. I didn't love what I did. I didn't love where I was going, and I knew I was going in that career, and so I just started thinking, like, hey, is there an opportunity for me to do something about this gap in the market that I know is there, and I know has been there since I was a college football fan?
Yeah.
So I went in and quit my job, and I figured out how to make clothes. And here we are 8 years ago. So that's the really short version, right? I had no idea what I was doing, but we figured it all out.
And I have to imagine, like, you're talking about more than what it looks like. You're talking about the fit.
Of course.
Talking about the material. Like, there's just so much more. You know, it's I find it fascinating that there's no even men's brand that, like, came out with, like, a real medium.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's small, there's medium. That's three sizes for a huge
population. There's companies that have been
people.
Around for 50, 100 years that are still figuring out size. They're still changing
But you know
every
what I'm
year.
Saying?
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
The fact that I have to go and be like, do I want a small or a medium or large? And I have to think about this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's frustrating that we haven't figure out a better model to do this, and I have to imagine that it's even harder for women to do this.
Of course, right? Because we're not. I don't want to say as basic as you men, but come on. I mean, like, why?
Oh, I'm basic. You don't. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah,
I'm
we're not just
me.
Doing polos. And like, how hard should it really be to figure out how to make six different sizes of a polo? The exact same polo in different colors.
No, that being said, we've gotten much fatter as a society.
That
so we got
true.
Now we have 6XL versus 1XL. So we figured
true.
That part out.
Yes,
but we haven't figured out, like, there's a difference between a medium and a large.
Also, in fashion, clothes are such a small, frankly, a small part of the business. Right, it's everything else, and it's trying to figure out where we're going to make them, and how are we going to market, and how are we going to have fulfillment, like all these pieces that I just knew nothing about, and so we've kind of.
So you're now
scratch.
In, I read, 350 retail locations.
Probably a little over 400. Yeah, we have 34 schools that we're partnered with.
You do your own e-commerce.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
have the intellectual property rights to these schools, which is a daunting task in itself,
absolutely.
And we'll talk about that.
Uh-huh.
So are you Southeast only? Talk about where the company stretches. So
so we really start, I mean, and I know you said we'll get into that.
I didn't see Maryland on your list,
not
so
yet.
I'm pissed off about
not
that.
Not yet. Let me tell you, so last year we had 14 schools. This year we expanded to 34. So we're really in this growth mode. Every year we're adding new ones. We started and we begged and pleaded two schools at the very beginning, and it was Florida and Tennessee. I don't know why they gave us a license, still to this day, no idea, but they did.
When does that expire?
Every year we have to renew it.
Okay.
So every year they're looking at ourselves.
So
and
hopefully
saying,
Florida State's cheaper this year. That's a good
thing. Well, yeah, I know. I wish that was the way it worked.
That's a good
but
thing.
Every year they're reevaluating us and saying, do you deserve to continue selling our stuff? So anyways, we started with those two, and then we kind of added, we continued with SEC and ACC, and then this year was our first year moving into the Big Ten and
Pac-12,
kind of
I saw
and expanding into those. And so what we know and do really, really well is kind of this SEC market.
Yeah.
And we're starting to learn about new markets and how we have to change our products to go to Wisconsin or Michigan or Michigan State.
Just the freaking weather. Like,
of course.
You're talking in September here, you can be 95 degrees on concrete burning, and you can be in Minnesota and there could be a snowstorm.
Yeah, and like, as you mentioned earlier, like what some people wear, just plain come out of, get out of bed and go, is very, very different than another school. Well, people wear it Florida and Florida State, even though they're relatively close, it's two very different ballparks.
Yeah. And I think that is actually what I enjoy the most about college campuses, is how you can be a mile away from each other and be such a different place. And for me, like, the great example here is Georgia Tech and Georgia State. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are a mile away from another campus. You could not be further from what the representation of the population is than those two schools. So I think that's a great point. All right. So you're in school. So you have the e-commerce site. So talk a little bit about that. So talk about, you go on, and I see them all listed out. They're on models. Mm-hmm. People can buy it from there. What percentage of your business is that versus retail?
We're about 85% of the business done through retailers, 15% through e-com. And that's,
do you like it better that way?
I like having both, if I'm being honest with you. And we need both of them. I really wanted to create and focus on e-commerce when I started the brand because I wanted a game day brand. And for me, there weren't any real women's brands that were doing that. Now, if you're going to go buy gear, you're probably going to go to Nike or something along those lines. But for women, they would just walk into a bookstore and grab a shirt, and they had no idea who made it.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to change that. I wanted people to come to Stuart Simmons, and like, even if they're not coming to our store, to be able to walk into a bookstore and say, hey, do you carry it?
Yeah.
And so it was really important to me that we have e-commerce, that we're connecting with our customers directly, that we're working. I mean, we pay a ton of money in photography and models, and you just don't see other brands doing that in the game day space.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, part of the experience is the experiential part of this is so important, right? And buying something online isn't the same experience as going into a store, because you go into a store and you're probably around people that have the same passions, and that makes that part of it, right? So but at the same time, you want your customers to have access to what they want when they want it. So you need the e-commerce as a backing.
You do.
So, you know, and I think as the brand grows, I'm sure there are other opportunities for pop-ups and collaborations and the experiential stuff. Because, you know, that's the other line you see now. Everything is a collaboration. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unfortunately, it'll probably means it's not going to be cool in 2 years because we're going to be behind the curve. Mm-hmm. But everything is a collaboration. Mm-hmm. The collaboration, all it means is they're going to charge you 60% more money for the exact same article of clothing and put X collabo on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get back. We're going to talk about a little bit more about just how, what the intellectual property navigating is, like all these things, because I think there are a lot of people out there who think, oh, that'd be cool, and don't know what the trials and tribulations that went into it. So you've been listening to The Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we'll be right back.
Now back to The Marketing Madmen on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to The Marketing Madmen on Extra 106.3. Nick Constantino here with Sheena Simmons, the CEO of Stuart Simmons. And let's just get that out of the bag. Why is it called Stuart Simmons and not Sheena Simmons?
So Stuart's my maiden name.
Okay.
And so a lot of times people ask me, who's Stuart? And I'm like, I am both Stuart and Simmons.
There you go.
I hate to disappoint you, but it's just me.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
And I will say, I did not want something that was like kitschy and like all game day-y. And so that's where Stuart Simmons came from, is I didn't want like a game day clothes, you know?
Well, I think kitschy, look, when you're building a brand long term, very few people go with kitsch.
Uh-huh.
And there's a reason, because the allure wears off, and like you set yourself up for long term failure. So I like the approach. One of the things I noticed just from browsing the e-commerce site, you're not your own logo heavy. You let the brands speak for themselves. So I'm curious, was that strategic? Is that part of the long-term vision? How did that come about? Did you realize it was happening? Because what happens a lot of times, and let's use Onward Reserve as a great example, right? They're co-branded, but that Onward Reserve is everywhere. They beat you over the head with it. Vineyard Vines, my goodness, if I see a stupid whale on someone's shirt gigantically, and you're almost detracting from the point, which is the team logo. So what was your thought process there?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, people are wearing Miami, Florida State stuff because they want to support Miami or Florida State. That being said, I feel like we have done such a good job of making our brand and our designs recognizable that we will always get messages from people being like, hey, I was in Vegas for the LSU game and I saw your stuff everywhere. And so I love the fact that we've been able to build the brand and let people know, like, hey, that's a Stuart Simmons product.
Without whoring the logo out everywhere.
Without putting the logo everywhere on it. So to me,
that
even feels, that's even cooler, is that people know and they recognize that it's us, even though it's not listed all over the product.
I like it. I think it probably is harder for new customer acquisition and loyalty of new people because I think people, unfortunately, have become very brand-centric, and I feel like they would just want to brag. I mean, you know, you're not going to buy a Vineyard Vines $89 shirt because it's any different than the $20 shirt. You're buying it because you want to show people that you wear Vineyard Vines.
But I sort of love the humble brag, right? Like they're showing up in a Stuart Simmons shirt that's still $140, and if you know, you know. You know, like people there... They know what it is, and they know the brand without it saying it all over.
I like it. And it's funny. It's one of those things you kind of age into also. When I was younger, I was like, I don't care what it looks like. Yeah. Now, as I'm no. I want something that will fit right, that won't fall apart in 2 days. Like, if it happens to be a Peter Millar shirt, so be it, right? There's a reason, to some extent, that things cost more money. And I think you find that out. And I'd rather have one good thing that'll last for 5 years than two crappy things that'll last for a year and a half each. Like, that's simple math at some point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. So you've been in business since 2016. Mm-hmm. So how has the apparel space changed? How has the collegiate licensing space changed? Mm-hmm. And what would you go back and tell yourself now when you were starting in 16? That's a loaded question with a lot in it. So I'm going to give you some time in this one. But I'm most curious of how this has all changed, because it sounds like it's been, oh, you know, you're talking 8-9 years. That's an eternity in this space.
It is, especially when you're talking about fashion. Right. And so what was cool, I mean, certainly 8 years ago is not at all what we're doing now. I mean, the styles change.
And things cycle faster.
Absolutely.
Right, the 80s came back, and then you're in the 90s. I mean, 100%. Wait a second. You're talking about a decade. How did it happen in a year and a half?
And what we really pride ourselves on doing is taking everyday styles that people are wearing out on the streets and making them game day. Right. And so we're trying to make things, and we're not figuring out what's going to be cool 5 years from now. Yeah. But we're like, what do people want to wear, and how can we make that, you know, UGA specific? And so we're constantly having to move faster in that space. As far as licensing, you know, schools have gotten more and more selective with who they want to bring on board. And we're in a lucky space now where we've been doing this for long enough, and we have the sales numbers to show it, that we don't have a hard time getting a license anymore. But for people that are new to the business or want to come into a licensed space, they want to work with fewer and fewer licensing partners. They want to work with Hanes or whomever it is and kind of have exclusives with them. And so it is becoming more difficult to get into this game day space.
Yeah. So two parts of how I understand this. Number one is most schools don't even control their own rights anymore. They hand these off to the Learfields, the IMGs, the Van Wagners, the Legends, who we have very close relationships with. I know all of them. And I know their business models are different because they are bigger companies with a bigger web and more want to deal with bigger national brands that have multiple places. And some of it's logistics just to make it easier. Some of it's accounting software. You know, you're paying licensing fees and to streamline it. But at the same time, I think that stagnates some of these brands. And if you are a smaller tier school, then the fashion lines you choose to partner with can build popularity for you if done the right way.
Yeah.
Right? Georgia doesn't need you or anybody else to put that G on there. Georgia's G explains it for itself. That being said, I don't know if that was the case 15 years ago or 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it is just, I get it from a brand's perspective, right? They want to be protective. The school should be protective of their university and who's putting stuff out there. For me, I see so much value in bringing diversity to the market. I see so much value in being able to go into a sports store and buy from different brands. And so I understand every bit of it, but I am also thankful that they're still allowing smaller brands to come in and get their foot in the door.
Yeah, I think there is a societal obligation these days. I think that I've never seen a more anti-corporate tone out there. People don't want to buy from the big guy right now.
Yeah.
I think politically, it's funny. I think politically that the left and the liberals and the Democrats were the ones perceived as anti-corporate. And I think somehow it's switched a little bit. Mm. Then now you watch the Republicans, they're like, oh my God, these corporations are destroying the world.
Well, this is a fun conversation. I didn't know we were getting into politics.
Was it because
of the debate last night? It's like still on your head.
I just find it fascinating that the anti-corporate rhetoric has switched sides.
Yeah.
Now, it's happened in this country a million times.
Yeah.
But the point is, I think that people... Look, they want to buy from the little guy until it gets too cost prohibitive or hard to do so. So set for you, it's setting a price point that's right, a niche market that's right, and convenience that's right, which is why I'm sure the e-commerce makes a ton of sense.
It does. And for us, it's also like, how long are we going to be the little guy? Like, we've really marketed ourselves as like, we're a brand that you know us, right? You know the people that are in the brand and they know our story. And we continue to grow, but we still want to be, not Nike, if you will, you know? And so it's an interesting place as far as how do we position the brand.
I'm curious, and please punch me in the face if I'm prying, how big is the market and what would you say your market share is in
Our market share is so small.
It's nearly impossible to know because they don't send these things out.
Yeah, but we don't know. I will tell you, we've gotten to a place where like, If you buy Women's Game Day apparel in one of these markets, you know who we are, right? And so we're really proud of that, but we still have so much room for growth.
Got it, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And Women's Day Game Day apparel is not even a market that people would even think exists. So,
oh, but it's so big.
Yeah. Again, I spend much of days. I will be in Athens at 9 a.m. on Saturday getting our tailgate ready to be in the middle of that. So I've seen it from the early through. I've seen how people set up. I mean, people are up there at 6 o'clock in the morning building their cities in the tailgates and everything. And it's whether the team is good or bad. I mean, right? Like,
but there are more of them when the team is good. Look,
Auburn sucks. Auburn sucked for a long time, okay? So the Auburn fans coming up there, there's no more or less of them that are going up there to Georgia.
But, you know, we have found that every fan base is different. And truthfully, some of them are more loyal than others.
Ah.
I know.
Now we're getting into the fun conversation.
I shouldn't poke my finger in it.
Talk about loyalty. Yeah. So how about you throw out some markets or places and I guess which brands
are loyal. No, I'm not playing this game with you. That's cool. I will tell you one thing. We very, very strongly believe in preseason sales.
Okay.
That we launch a collection August 1st, and we do everything we can to sell the heck out of that collection before games start.
Because they're undefeated.
Exactly. As soon as teams start to lose, I mean, it becomes really difficult for us.
And I think that's getting harder. And I think this is part of the problem when money comes into this, right? Florida State was number 6 in the country because Florida is a big state, and if they build hype there, more people will watch. And I think, I don't care what they say. I don't care if Condoleezza Rice is still picking this stuff. They are picking where the money is, right? That's why you don't see North Dakota State ever ranked at anything. One, because they're never going to be good at anything, just unfortunately, but it's because there's no people there to build hype around.
Yeah.
That is why you see Notre Dame fail year after year after year because the fan base is so big. Mm-hmm. That is why you think that college football wanted Texas to stay bad? There is no one on earth that is going to try to tell me that this has not been some master plan ploy. And come after me for all it's worth. Well, I'm not even touching NIL, so you owe me one, college football. Talk about some fan bases that have surprised you, that you would have never expect them to be fan bases that are pre-selling or that are doing really well. And some of the opposite.
Well, here's what I will say. I one of the things that we have learned over the years that up-and-coming teams, right? So like Georgia has been huge for us for years, but at some point, like they've been... After year 3 or 4, you know, everybody kind of has all their stuff, right?
Sure.
Like Tennessee is a good example. Like 5 or 6 years ago, we couldn't get rid of Tennessee inventory. But for the past few years, there's so much excitement. Yeah. Like that is the sweet spot.
Yeah, that's the hype.
Us.
That's the hype machine.
It's the hype phase.
That's usually a coach in his 3rd or 4th year who has Heupel's got his. He's got his big. They've won 1 or 2 big games. They've had a couple big name guys guys come out. But I have to imagine, you're right. I mean, even. Going into a three-peat last year for Georgia, the hype wasn't the same amount of hype.
Yeah, so it's us getting, like, finding the schools when they're just hot and there's that hype phase.
Yeah.
And listen, for us, because we have to buy inventory so far before the season starts, this stuff is so important for us. Like, understanding what's going on in the team and trying to project how much inventory we're going to buy across 34 schools and 700 SKUs, that's huge.
Yeah, so we're going to get real nerdy.
Yeah.
What kind of CRM systems are you using? Are you using AI to predetermine? Are we bringing this stuff in? Who's getting intuition?
We're using me and Excel. That's what we use. And luckily, that finance background. Like, one of my favorite things to do is to sit down and run numbers.
I can't tell you. I was a finance reason for no... Actually, I was a finance major because I was going to take what was called decision information system.
Yeah.
I took a math 116 class. I walked in and 3 minutes later, I walked out and changed my major. That was not a thing that was in my level of, I didn't want to do it.
That's one of the things I still hold on to and really love to do, honestly.
I love Excel.
Is sit down and just start to project. Like, what do we think is going to happen for the year? How much inventory should we be buying across all these schools? And we've been doing this at enough of the schools for so long that we've got sales data, right? Like, we have a good feel for how much to bring in every year. But then, you know, you lose a game or two and all that's out the window.
Yeah. 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 I have to imagine, like, Florida's got to be one of those tricky ones. I mean, that school, you know, and look, I see the other side of college sports, right? Like, Florida, for what it's worth, and I know the public perception is, my God, the football team, they have a $5 billion research budget. If you look at U.S. News and World Report, they are a top public institution year after year.
Yeah.
What do they care about the football team? I know, I get it. And I know that you have to put on these airs that, yes, it's so important, it's Florida. But what does UNC Chapel Hill care about the sports teams? What does Michigan? Michigan is one of the most prominent institutions in the world. Mm-hmm. What do they care? Like Georgia Tech, for what it's worth, we're with them all the time. I love those guys, but there's so much more for them to hold their hat on of the prominence of the institution. So I think it's going to get messier. I think NIL is going to change a lot of this. What about things that have come up that you would never thought when you were starting your business career? Again, we'll go back to the advice you would give yourself back in 2016.
Oh, man. I think it's very intimidating to think about building a brand, right? Intimidating to think about starting a clothing company. I will say this, like, you don't need $50 million to start selling clothes. I started with hardly any money. I started with a HELOC on my mortgage. Right. And you
Good
can. Yeah. And it, all we've done is simply invested everything that we have back into the business. I feel like when I started this, I thought of fashion as being, you think it's glamorous, right? Even we're talking, you picture tailgates and it's runways and all the things. Fashion and retail is a lot of grunt work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of figuring out logistics and spending time doing forecasts and all the things. But man, there is nothing to me. So I love college sports. I love college football. There is nothing to me that is better than going to Athens on a Saturday and seeing a third of the girls walk by wearing stuff that we designed.
Well,
I mean, it doesn't matter how much work it is.
I love it.
It all pays off.
I love it because now I get to be more aware of it and I get to see it in real time because it was not anything that was ever brought to my attention. So my wife is just... It's just not her thing. Mm. It was just, she wasn't born in the U.S.
So it's football or?
Just in, she became a college basketball fan because she spent a semester at Duke.
Okay.
And it's like contagious at somewhere like Duke. So, but I've taken her to games in Sanford. She fell asleep in Sanford.
Oh no.
Like we've gone, I've tried. She went to Georgia State. I'd be like, let's go to a Georgia State game. We sat courtside for Georgia State versus Southern. She loved that.
Yeah.
But it's more.
Give me a box and I can't say no, you know?
It's more that. Now, you bring up a fun point because I wonder what's going to happen. Like, my daughter is 7. Mm-hmm. She has only sat floor seats, courtside, luxury suite. She's never seen anything else.
Yeah.
So I don't know what kind of fan she's going to be. But, you know, I think the nature of how we interact with sports has changed so much. I remember, and it's funny, I was watching a documentary about Greg Maddux, and like they show these pictures of old fat white men at Wrigley Field with no shirts on, just sitting in the outfield in the 80s. And like, that's the experience that was there. Like when you would pay, you know, $1.50 to get into a game.
Right.
Now, and NIL is going to further contribute to this. Like, the schools are going to want so much money. It's going to be such that you're going to leave so many people out of the experience.
Yeah.
And does that extend to fashion? We're yet to see.
Yeah, I don't know, because for us, and I've said, like, hey, we're making game day apparel for you to wear at home and celebrate or whatever it may be. But really, from the Stuart Simmons perspective, our stuff is the glitz and the glam, right? Like, we're really selling stuff for people that are showing up to show off on game day.
Right.
And so,
but
like,
you can show up in your house. You're right.
You can, but like, it's the people that are investing the type of money in our stuff. They're a lot of times there in Athens at the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, you brought up a good funny point about grunt work. So like my business, especially 680 The Fan and what we do on the sports side is very similar, right? Everyone sees we're broadcasting live from the World Series. Everyone sees my World Series ring that the Braves gave me. Mm. No one knows the grunt work that went into making that stuff happen.
Yeah.
And the sponsorships and making sure the radio station stays on. There was a hurricane here. If this radio station goes off, we are breaking like 15 different FCC laws. Mm-hmm. So I think it's true of most industries. And I think, you know, fashion just seems to be the one because we have the eyes on Vogue and these magazines that
it's all glitz and glamour. And you brought up COVID earlier and I forgot to speak to it, but like, we were doing fashion during COVID in which we didn't know if football games were going to happen. We had factories that were closed or not closed. Like, that's the amount of
at least you weren't in the Northeast when that was all happening.
Yes.
I mean, this freaking stadium, they said it was going to be closed for the year. One day later, like, nope, 25%, 2 days later, like 50%, 3 days later, like, you know what, screw it, just let everybody in, who cares?
Well, and we're trying to figure out what's going to happen 5 months ahead of time, right? Because we're trying to buy inventory for games that are happening in August.
And it was
August.
All stuck overseas, and then you see
it
Long
was,
Beach
It was, and then just, those things are closing, and the factories are
And then all of a sudden
open.
They come in, and you're inundated with inventory that you can't get rid of.
Yeah, and so it's the amount of work, but just the dang amount of stress that goes in.
Well,
like, we get, even this, like, to this day, we get products that show up at our warehouse every year, and I feel like I just want to do a happy dance. Like, the amount of work to get it here into our hands is so much.
Yeah, and so one of the things I look, I'm not going to pretend to be any fashion expert, but just anecdotally from watching, like Nautica, Tommy Hilfiger, Polo, they all went to crap when they started showing up in Marshalls, and they discounted their own prices, and they discounted their own brands, and it is very hard to recover from that. And their simple response was, "Oh, that's Chaps by Ralph Lauren. It's not the same brand, but that's not how things work." So talk about how you protect the brand integrity when you're stuck with all this extra merchandise, because it's got to be a fine line to walk.
100%. I have found that so much of protecting the brand is choosing who you partner with.
Okay.
So retail is a huge piece of it, and we're very protective over who we sell our products to. And we've had some similar Marshalls, not Marshalls, but similar type retailers.
And I'm not bashing them.
They are actually
one of the most, the TJ Maxx Corporation is one of the most successful institutions because the way they curate every store better than Macy's.
Yes.
These days, it looks like Macy's, they took a bomb, they threw it in the middle of Macy's, they let it go off,
and then
that's where the stuff lands.
It's a mess.
If you go into
a
good Marshalls or good, it is very well curated with the things that people want. It's not a criticism, but back in the 90s, when I was growing up, they took brands that were these prominent, prestigious brands that all men immediately, they just devalued them by throwing them there.
You can't be all things to all people, right? We know that. And I think that's oftentimes what brands try to do. And so for us, we, in order for us to stay a premium brand, we can only work with select retailers. We know that. And we have ones that come to us and we've considered that. Well, do we stick a new name on it? But we can't do that. We can't sell to Marshalls. And this is not people we sell to. But you can't sell to Marshalls and Neiman Marcus, right? You cannot do that. And so you have to be really careful.
So what do you do with it? What do you do with inventory that's left over?
You either discount it to your current retailers that you're working with, or you sit on it, because I guarantee you Florida State may not turn it around this year, but we're going to at some point. And we had stuff I talked about 4 or 5 years ago. We couldn't get rid of Tennessee stuff to save our lives, but it's all gone now, right? It comes back. And so sometimes it's just a matter of being patient and holding it until the team comes back.
And one of the things that I love is the jeans and t-shirt will always be in style.
Yeah.
There's some things that we get so over infatuated, like, guys, hold on a second, okay? Since the 1890s, a pair of Levi's jeans with a t-shirt was in fashion. In 1,000 years, if you come back here, that will be in fashion, okay? There are some things that don't change.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think how big logos are on shirts and graphic tees and stuff, that goes in and out of style very quickly, right? You know, I tend to be just colors. Like, there's no logos on anything I have because, like, I don't get to go out often, right? If I go out 12, 15 times a year, I have like 100 shirts sitting there. But I think there are some things, and if you're smart enough to know to not fall victim of buying the trendy things all the time, I think you can avoid a lot of that trap. But that being said, that's not what Instagram teaches you. It teaches you fast fashion. And look at the boots this girl was wearing. She's popular. Let's go this route.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that too, I've talked about projections and being careful about ordering inventory. I don't order 5,000 of anything that we bring in. Right, we would much rather sell out of something than continue to sit on it.
But that hurts margins.
Of
because
course.
You're not buying as much bulk.
Yeah.
So
But it also trains our customers. Hey, if I want this Stuart Simmons product, I got to buy it when they launch, because if I come back on October 1st, it's not going to be there. And so I would rather have that. I would rather have them pooling and asking for more than us just trying to stuff product down their throats.
Yeah, and that was near impossible 10 years ago, 15 years ago, to run business that way. And you kind of see one of the things, and I'm curious, we have 3 more minutes in this segment. So one of the things I've found about fashion, so I think social media is a great advertising platform for e-commerce and fashion, because you can track a sale all the way to beginning to end. Yeah. You learn the data on the audience. But I have found that once people realize that, every fashion company just bombards social media with the same messaging, and they're just beating the crap of each other for the same audience, the same people. What has your experience been with social media, with advertising, with e-commerce? How have you built the brand? Is it been organically? Because that will be a good segue into the last segment. We'll get a little bit more nitty-gritty and talk a little bit about the future.
Yeah, social media is so important for us. And we, you know, people are getting our products either through our website or through our retailers. We're not a little store sitting there kind of getting to talk to folks. And so we use it as a way to get people to know us. But I talked about how important it is as a brand, who you align yourself with from a retailer perspective. But I also think it's equally important who you align yourself with when you're talking about other brands and influencers. And so we spend a lot of time going through social media and trying to figure out, well, hey, who is like one of our target markets that went to Tennessee or wherever it may be, and working with those people to create authentic experiences for their followers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and align them with Stuart Simmons.
Yeah. Which much, much easier said than done.
Oh my gosh.
Every person in every marketing room in the world is saying those exact words. It is not easy. It is not easy to do. And I think one of the biggest problems is that all of a sudden the word influencer has become trendy. So now there's this whole industry behind influencers, and it is so easy to fake social media followings. It is so easy to buy your way into these mechanisms.
Yeah.
And the you know, one of the things most people don't know, but for a radio station to operate, we have an FCC license, we have affidavits, we have EEO requirements, we are government mandate, there are audits, there's so much that goes into it. You can put anything you want on social media with any claim. There's not a level of regulation. There's nowhere to be found. And it's not a criticism, because Zuckerberg has said it best. He's told Congress, do something about it. They're just too old and stagnant to do anything about it. But how is the brand? How have you built the brand? Because what I know about social media, it's that ROI. It's that quick, instantaneous. Yeah. I want you to think about it a little bit. When we talk about it, come back from the break, we're going to talk about that brand building. Because I think it's been a lost art in marketing these days. Everyone wants data. And you know, you cannot create an emotional response with data. You cannot. The best ads in your head were not, oh my God, they really hit those data points for me. It was an emotional in your head that created like, that's cool.
It's the Publix ad that made you cry, you know? It happens to me every time.
And every year you expect it to come. And
I
now
do,
you want to be
and then
out-cried.
It comes and I'm still crying.
You want to be out-cried. I mean, if anyone's mastered the art of that, it's Disney. I mean, I watched Inside Out too. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to cry like the first one.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
An hour in, I'm like, oh my God, it's even more. Because
like
my daughter's older now and it's fit me perfectly. Okay, so we went off talking, but luckily this segment's about to end and we'll come back and we'll finish the conversation. You've been listening to The Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. We'll be right back.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. Nick Constantino here, and we're finishing up our conversation with Sheena Simmons, the CEO of Stuart Simmons. And we've covered a lot, as we usually do. What I'm most curious about is, what is the intention with the brand? You have now cultivated for 8 going on 9 years this brand. The passion that you have for it and seeing people in it is clear. What do you do to protect this brand? What do you do to grow this brand? Let's take, it doesn't have to just be a marketing conversation, but I have to imagine your life is so intertwined with this brand now. You feel like you are the ambassador. Talk about what you do to protect and grow this brand.
Well, I'll start with the growth perspective. I told you that we went from 14 to 34 schools this year. We want to take what we're doing at those 34 schools and bring it to more universities. And so that's super important to us.
Maryland. Okay, University of Maryland,
right,
Terrapins.
Fine.
The turtle's really cool.
Bring some turtles on board. You'll have to teach me a little bit. Honestly, I love going to new schools because I get to learn. Like, I don't know what all these mascots
it's
are, what all the sayings are.
And there's
a
big testudo. It's a kind of turtle, terrapin.
Okay.
And you rub his nose in the middle of the mall for good luck before every game.
Yeah,
everyone has to go rub the turtle's nose.
This is news to me, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so learning all these things is a whole heck of a lot of fun. But hey, when we're making products, like, we want to know that. We want to know what the sayings are. We want to know what the colors are that they really wear, not what's on their catalog, that type of thing. But we also, we have been very, very football-based. And that's where my true love is. That's what I've always been a big fan of. But we're starting to expand outside of just doing football clothes. And we've started working with schools that are more basketball-oriented or baseball-oriented. And so we're starting to bring in, this year is the first year that we'll launch our first winter collection. And so we're starting to bring stuff that's more basketball-oriented so that we're not really putting all of our eggs in one basket when it comes to football. But we've got these other sports that we're marketing towards as well.
And you have the expansion, proliferation of women's sports.
Of course, which is so exciting.
It's just insane.
Yeah, and we're a women brand, right?
So I feel like the public demand is very inauthentic. I feel like it was triggered. I feel like, look, Caitlin Clark, that's it, right? This whole wave has started, but there are lots of good players. But I feel like the biggest problem you have is that everyone wants to have all this money and all this stuff invested, but you are putting the supply first and the demand has to be first. Mm. And yes, there's demand there when she shows up, but the rest of the games, there's only 6,000 people at the arena.
Yeah.
And the rest of the times, you don't see WNBA shirts going for sale at stores. So the demand needs to build up. We're trying to push it on the supply side, which never ends well. So I just think that instead of trying to force this down people's throats, let the free market dictate what happens. So I think that's a good thing for you, because I don't test you as someone who's going to go on and try to rig the system and rig supply. But I think as women become more involved in this, anything that's the case will help help the business.
I will tell you, I'm intrigued by it. And I'm willing to go out there and say, let's make some product for it and let's see what happens, right? Like, that's how excited I am just about the growth of women's sports in general. And so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, again, we're gonna get. I don't want to get into the NIL conversation, but I think
I feel like you maybe do want to get into.
Look. It's gonna destroy sports. The amount of money everybody's got their hands out is the problem. Every time you have a modern form of marketing, it's one of the big problems of digital marketing. Everybody's got their hands out. Everyone wants a cut. By the time it gets to the players, who does it really help? Does it really go to the female athletes that deserve it the most, or is it the hot chicks with the most Instagram followers? Yeah. And we know what's happening, so that's why I said I don't want to cover it because I don't have a very positive outlook right now. Yep. And look, it's another new emerging industry. It will self-rationalize. It will normal out. It will normalize out. I just get really worried that all of a sudden, to pay the players, to pay the schools, to pay the IMGs of the world, to pay everybody, the ticket prices have to go up, and the experience have to go up, and then the trademarking has to go up, and the licenses have to go up, and then the ability to watch it costs are going to go up. And if all those costs go up, are you separating yourselves from the audience who built you with what you are?
Yeah.
That's my big concern. So, okay, well, we went Debbie Downers. Let's go back to Patty Positive.
Yeah.
So one of the things here it says is that work-life balance is really important. I imagine that's for your people. How many employees do you guys have now?
We're only four, so still a small team full-time, and then we've outsourced a lot of stuff.
Good for you. Yeah. So that work-life balance is important, though. And you got to make sure you have time to go play and be out and see these things. It's got to be a product that you use also, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we're all, I mean, everybody on the team, it's all, the four of us are women. And so we're all, you know, juggling all the different things. But listen, like work-life balance for the first 6 years was not a thing for me, right? You don't go into this expecting to build a brand and be able to be there for every moment. And so, frankly, I'm just now at the point where I'm starting to really reap the benefits of that. And once you start to taste it and you realize that you actually can grow a brand and be very involved with everything else, you get kind of excited by that.
Yeah, and I think what you do is you remove barriers to entry for somebody to come and take your lunch behind you, and that's what the work goes towards, right?
Yes.
Right? Like Nike was on top of the world until all of a sudden Lululemon and On and Hoka started creeping up the back, and they didn't try to build Rome in a day. They came up the backside, they did the things their own way, and then all of a sudden it blatantly looked like Nike knee-jerk to try to start defensive mode. And when you're in defensive mode, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So talk about some of your favorite products. Talk about the ones that people should buy and tell people how to find you and what to look for. Because again, I think that there's probably more to it than we've even put out from this show.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you want statement pieces to wear on game day or your brand, so if you want sequins or big glitter script or oversized everything, then come to Stuart Simmons, and we've got a lot of fun stuff coming out for 2025 and fun matching sets and, you know, big fringe everything. And so it's a lot of new stuff coming out. But yeah, we're here for the fans that really want to go and show off their fandom.
Yeah, so T-shirts, headbands. I mean, again, I'm not a girly guy, so I don't know the answer to this. I'm getting better with my daughter, but like headbands, T-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, sweatpants. What kind of stuff are we talking?
We're everything. All clothes, just apparel, and so we're not doing accessories. And you know, it's interesting with licensing. Like, you need permission to do anything new. If I want to make tank tops and I was just doing shirts, you have to get their sign off with every single school.
Yeah.
And so we're doing apparel and just game day apparel, women and children.
How's the children market going?
You know, it's great. And we don't have it across all of our schools. Okay. We love to do mommy and me pieces.
Yeah.
And so what you'll see is a lot of matching. It's fun, frankly. Do we make a lot of money off of it? No.
Yeah.
There's just not the margin there.
It's fun. Watching my daughter, when she goes, Daddy, can we wear our matching shirts when we go to bed tonight? Like, that is just like a melt to your heart, because it's not going to happen for very long. Like, she's not matching me. You know, she's 7 now. I think till that she's 10, maybe she's going to say, Daddy, can we match? So, like, I see the appeal of it. But at the same time, they grow even faster. And like
They do. And people don't like to spend a ton of money on it. But frankly, it costs me just as much to make a kid's shirt as it does a woman's shirt, right? And so that... It's kind of hard financially, but I told you I love walking around games and seeing women wear our products. I really love walking around games and seeing the little ones wear our stuff. That's what really melts my heart.
That's awesome. So let's pretend that there's no one on earth that's going to be a competitor to you. Uh-huh. What advice do you have people that are trying to start their own business, trying to get into these kind of spaces? What tips would you have for them?
Yeah, know your market. I mean, that's always going to be the first thing. Like, we know who our customer is, and every year we create a brand new stinking collection And it doesn't look anything like last year's collection, but we know exactly who our customer is and what it is that we need to create.
Now, that's more intuition than data, you said. This is not a huge data set. This is just
frankly, that is so much work for us. That is so much market research. That's going to these games. That's seeing what people are wearing. It's talking to our retailers and seeing what they're looking for. And so that is a big piece of what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I think that's the problem is a lot of people rely on a set of data and they're trying to make inferences and deduct things, and you'll never be able to deduct the same thing as you would going to a game and seeing what the tailgate experience is like 100%. And the pregame experience.
And like I said,
like,
that's different at every school. And so we can't just go to a game at Georgia and say this is what we need to do for everybody.
If you have never been to the Iron Bowl, Auburn versus Alabama, you don't know anything. Because if those two teams were the worst teams in America, they would come to kill each other in that game, and there would be more pageantry than anything on earth. Like, I think Georgia Tech used to have that. I know it's still there, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. It's just not the same. The communities have so much. One of the things about Atlanta, there's so much to do, right? You're in the middle of Alabama between Tuscaloosa and Auburn. What are you going to do?
They got football. Yeah, that's it.
They got football. Well, this has been a great conversation. Tell everybody where to find you. Tell them the social handles and everything.
Go to StuartSimmons.com, #Stuart_Simmons across social.
And then go to check out Extra 106.3. Check out The Marketing Madman. Listen to previous episodes. Check out, we got a lot of content just like this. You've been listening to The Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we will catch you next week.